It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I think I said this last time I did the show. So I can't remember how to start this. What's up, guys? Welcome to the At the Hive podcast. Part of the SB Nation Network of Podcasts. This is Jonathan, and I am joined by Chase. Chase, welcome back to talking about Hornets basketball.
I am elated to be here. Not excited, elated. The Hornets season is almost upon us. One more sleep, and then we're there, back watching the purple and teal back out there. It's been not a long offseason. It's been a normal offseason, which feels long.
Right.
Because the last two NBA seasons came over the course of what felt like 2 weeks, so...
Yeah,
recharge the batteries. We're ready to go.
Yeah, we had the bubble. We basically had like the NBA offseason started like on the day of the NBA finals after the bubble, and then the next season was delayed. So we've had basically the two off seasons before this one were like combined to the length of one off season normally.
Exactly.
But it's been nice to get back to normal. Have the same like the whole routine, the summer league, the free agent frenzy, and all that stuff. We don't need to go into a whole lot of depth. We've kind of talked about this in little bits and pieces, but the Hornets had like about the most nightmarish offseason you could ever have. So I think that's
are having still.
Yeah, so
guess, 1 to 2 days before the regular season starts, we are still having this nightmarish
unfortunately. The Hornets seem to be starting this new tradition where right on the eve of a significant NBA calendar event, a player gets arrested. So James Bouknight was booked for, I believe it was DWI, right?
I think so. It was like the details seem pretty hazy so far, but he was arrested in his car in a parking garage, it seems, I guess.
Which is an unusual, I mean, I guess if you're behind the wheel, I don't know all the rules and the specifics of that, but if you're behind the wheel, even if you're not like physically moving the car, that qualifies you for DWI, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know for a fact either, but that does sound correct. Yeah, I think it's any if you're in or on anything with wheels, like a skateboard or a bike counts too.
so that's bad. Now, like not to belittle what it is, but you know, at least it wasn't. I mean, I don't know what his intent was, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been, I guess, right? Like he's just
right.
Passed out in his car in a parking garage, which is, I mean, aside from the legality of it, is extremely questionable behavior for a millionaire professional athlete.
Right.
Like you have no reason to even be intending to drive a car while under the influence, because you have lots of money and a whole entourage of people, I'm assuming, to help with these things. And also, like from a safety perspective, just falling asleep in your car in a parking deck is not an ideal place to take a nap.
No, I think I'd agree with that. And it's just, of course, like, this is something that didn't harm anybody else, thankfully, but obviously, like, James Bouknight is not going to benefit from the situation, and hopefully he's doing well, like, personally, and that's not something that led to this, and it was just a bad mistake, like, bump in the road type of thing, but we'll see, I guess, what comes of it. Nick Carboni from WCNC reported that he was at practice today, so we will, I guess, see what comes of that as the days transpire.
Right. So that's not ideal. Like I said, I think it's just another red flag against his decision making, which has come into a lot of focus over the last calendar year or so. But just like a series of bad decisions. So that's not what you like to see right before the season starts.
No, definitely not. It's especially after the off season the Hornets have had, there have been more, you know, I don't want to say like distractions, but I guess negative pieces of news coming out about the team and players on the team than positive pieces, I guess. So,
yep.
Hopefully we get the vibes back on track here soon.
Yeah. Well, not right now, because the other thing it came out today, and this is kind of expected, but it came out today that LaMelo Ball is not going to play in the season opener, or it's doubtful to play in the season opener, and he might not travel at all for the first two games that are both on the road. So, yeah, just the vibes. Or I guess it's only one game, but yeah, he probably won't even travel with the team, which doesn't speak super well of his availability in the days after the season opener. So yeah, vibes staying high.
Yeah, and I didn't even really think about this because I wasn't expecting it to happen, but another thing that happened today, PJ Washington did not receive an extension prior to the deadline, so he is going to be a restricted free agent heading into next summer. So this is a contract year for PJ. The Hornets did not extend him. Probably would have been something in the range of what the Brandon Clark contract was for Memphis, which was a 4-year, $52 million deal. So who knows if he plays himself into something bigger, or I can't imagine it'd get any smaller, but unless he gets hurt or something. But
yeah,
we'll have to see how that plays out.
I'm not super. I don't have any like positive or negative reaction to that. I think that's pretty par for the course. Like there are plenty of other significant contributors that on their same rookie deal that didn't get extensions. It's just one of the it's kind of one of those things where if you haven't like played out a max level and you feel like, you know, you're probably not going to take the contract that you're offered as on that rookie extension because you're going to bet on yourself, especially, you know, it's only your fourth year. And then a player like PJ Washington has a door open for him to increase his value.
Yep,
so exactly. It'd be very hard to give him on a deal that both sides agree on before he hits free agency.
Right. And I was, you're exactly right that not everybody gets these types of deal done. I was thinking that a good, not comparison, but somebody that also didn't get their deal done with their respective team was Grant Williams. And he has an opportunity to contribute a little bit more the start of the season with Robert Williams out for Boston. He's also pretty good. Would command like a 4-year, $50 to $70 million contract. So a lot of guys that are not max level are willing to kind of bet on themselves, I guess would be the right term.
Cam Johnson was another one. Rui Hachimura is another one. By the way, I just was pulling up Cam Johnson while I was double-checking that I was right, and he's already almost 27 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's why you don't draft seniors in the lottery.
Yeah, he's was 24 when he finished school at UNC. I want to say he was a grad student. Yeah, 23. Okay.
But yeah, because he's entering the final year of his rookie contract. And he's going to turn 27. Like that's not generally what you like to see from your first round picks. I mean, he's a good player, and the Suns have made success. But just like as a general rule of thumb, when evaluating players, when you're deciding who you kind of want the Hornets to pick and who you're trying to manifest under the team, probably like tie goes to the 19-year-old over the 22-year-old. But I guess to shift our focus to stuff on the court, the preseason is come and gone. It went about as poorly as a preseason can go. I wrote about it a few days ago or last week, and there's kind of like two things you can do with the preseason. If it goes well, you can, you know, you always go to the preseason saying it doesn't matter. Don't read into anything about the results or anything. But if the team plays really well, you're going to use that to be optimistic, right? Like that's all.
Oh yeah.
And then if the team plays poorly, then you just write it off as, well, it's preseason. Who cares? Never matters. When the team plays poorly, you at least say, as long as we stay healthy, we're good. And the Hornets 0-2 played really, really
poorly. Literally.
And the best player is, I mean, he's not badly hurt, but, and their best player is also hurt. So I think we can call the preseason a colossal failure on all levels. Still doesn't mean anything for like what's going to happen this season, but with how bad everything has been going into the preseason, the fact that the preseason gave us nothing to turn around our spiral into Hornets-based depression is just kind of disappointing, I guess.
Yeah, to avoid that spiral, what I've been repeating in my head probably 2 to 3 dozen times per day is just that it's like if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to hear it, does it make a sound? If you lose all 5 games in the preseason but 3 days later, those five losses are erased. Did they really even happen? I don't know. No. Right now, the Hornets are 0-0. You can't tell me for sure that they have lost five games in a row because I don't know. They didn't count. Yep.
Doesn't even count.
That's how you cope right there, I think.
Yeah, I should have done some more research. I could have cherry picked like a good team from a random season and been like, you know, this team went 0-5 in the preseason and they won the championship, but I can't find one.
I mean, last year they had that game against the Mavericks where they were down by like 115 points at one time.
Yeah.
I mean, not actually. I think it was like literally like 70.
They were down by 70 or 65 or something at one point. It was one of the worst basketball games I think that's ever been played.
It's up there.
Yeah, they lost by 68 points.
Okay, there we go. You kept it under 70. People would talk about it more if it was a 70-point loss. So
I mean, I don't know when. I mean, I know it's a preseason game, but like pulling up a box score and seeing a 59 as a final score for an NBA team is wild.
Yeah, right. Like that should, like the Syracuse Royals should be scoring 59 points, not the 2022 Charlotte Hornets.
Right, that's pretty crazy. They were trailing by 70 at one point, but Scotty Lewis made some free throws to seal the under 70 point defeat. Anyway, for things that are relevant, the preseason, I think, because of the poor play in all, kind of didn't give us a whole lot to talk about in that front. But I think a couple of the things that I thought, and you can add what your thoughts are as well. LaMelo Ball looks like he's trying to be more aggressive as a scorer, which is good because as good as he is, he still sometimes I feel like kind of doesn't he gets like a he becomes a little deferential, like tries to fit in, and it's nice to see him being more aggressive as a scorer. And then the other thing I took away from it is Nick Richards looked really good.
Yeah, Nick has been awesome. I think Steve Clifford has talked about him. Fans have been talking about him. People in the media have written about him and given him like pretty glowing praise so far. I'm super excited for Nick Richards, and it's kind of like not necessarily Nick himself, but like Steve Clifford. And for all the grief he gets about not playing young players, he's doing exactly what people were clamoring for over the last two seasons. Like he is right away giving one of these young centers like guaranteed minutes, like at media day before they had even practiced. He was like, yep, Nick Richards is our backup center. So obviously that means like somebody like Mark Williams or Kai Jones or JT Thor is going to get a chance to be the backup center or even the starter if they prove themselves capable of that when the time comes. So that is definitely a positive sign, not only like for Nick and his play, because he's been really good, but for the other guys. Like, so when they're good, they're going to get on the court. Like, it's not like you're playing to a specific like style. Like, you don't have 25 minutes or whatever of PJ playing center every game. If you have Mark Williams to protect the rim, if you have Nick Richards or whatever, and you can play 48 minutes with a guy that's 7 feet and can block shots and rebound, especially on a Cliff team, like, he's going to do that. So, I think that's going to happen sooner or later. And Nick is the catalyst for it all. So good for him.
Yeah, and I think, and I've always thought that, not always, because I kind of probably bought into it more in live, but kind of looking back, I think the Steve Clifford doesn't play young guys trope is overblown.
Yeah, he didn't play Malik Monk, but that was
right. He didn't play Malik Monk. Basically, it. Yeah, because like Dwayne Bacon and PJ Washington were like starting at different.
Yeah, PJ started when over Marvin Harrison. Williams on opening night.
Right,
and PJ Harrison, both PJs. He loves PJs clearly, or the Hornets love PJs. So.
Yeah, PJ. Yeah, but like, yeah, so. And then also, for better or worse, the Hornets teams under Clifford have been trying to win games, and teams like that are always playing their players that win them games. But to your point, Nick Richards being kind of tabbed as the backup center means one, like players can earn their way in, and also it kind of leaves the door open more, right, for the other guys, because it's not like they're bringing in a Rashawn Holmes or other veteran center that's going to basically be pencil or like written in stone or carved in stone as the backup or starter with Mason Plumlee as the backup. So it's like a very wide open position battle. Other than that, did you have any other kind of big takeaways from the preseason and as a whole?
I agree with the stuff you said about LaMelo too. He's definitely been more aggressive hunting his own shot, which not only is good to see for his development personally, but the Hornets are going to need that like a lot.
Yeah.
They're going to need a lot of nights where he takes 20 shots, 25 shots. And that's fine. Like, he doesn't even need to be efficient with them every time. Like, he just needs to assert himself, because there's no way the Hornets are offense is going to be like believable almost if he doesn't, because it's like, okay, like, go ahead, LaMelo, pass to Terry Rozier or Gordon Hayward, and then other than that, like, the defense is going to live with whatever they get. So
I was excited
to see that.
I want to see him shooting like 10 or 11 threes a game too.
Oh yeah, he's got I feel like he should get free reign for like Dame Lillard range, because it seems like he has the ability and like the touch from that range to be able to just stop and pull up off the dribble and just launch from above the break. So he should get the ultimate green light. That turnaround like fadeaway he hit at the free throw line against Indiana. All right. I just pulled it up. So he's at the above the break. He takes like a couple hard dribbles right at Isaiah Jackson, plants his right foot and spins and turns around and hits the smoothest looking turnaround that I've ever seen him hit. If he can do that like once every game or two, like, and just keep that shot in his arsenal, like, it's going to open up so much more. He doesn't need to be some big bulky 6'7" guy if he can shoot efficiently at all three levels and with the touch that he has to get those circus layups off and those crazy floaters from like wild angles and like 10-foot range. Like, he's gonna be fine.
Also, and you want to see him draw fouls, right?
Yes, exactly.
If there's anything I learned from
I want seven free throw attempts per game every single game.
As an aside, I don't know how much you watched like the post practice interviews and stuff or press conferences. The amount of questions that Steve Clifford got asked about LaMelo Ball drawing fouls was absurd. It was like such an innocuous comment that he made. We're just like, yeah, I want to see him shoot like two more free throws a game, and we're working on that with him. And everybody's like, oh my god, this is a story.
I think it's. I mean, he's been not even bad, I guess, but that's been like his one weakness. So it's definitely easy for people to fixate on it and be like, well, everyone said he was bad at shooting, and now he's really good at that. He's always been really good at passing and ball handling. He's young, so he's not going to be that good at defense yet. What else is there to be good at? Layups. Right. And I mean, he'll get better at that. Like, it'll just come in time. Like, it takes a while to get used to driving to the basket and then having Joel Embiid, Bam Adebayo, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Giannis Antetokounmpo come at you and put their chest to you and try to knock you to the ground. Like, it takes hundreds of games to get used to that type of thing.
Especially with how lanky he is naturally.
Right, exactly. Like, he can get around, he's shown that he can get around players like this. It's just when they are able to stop him and make him go through them, it's not successful. But I think in time we'll see that more and more. And all the comments he's said over the summer, or like over the preseason and training camp and stuff, make it seem like that's something he is like consciously working on and knows that like, oh, this is one of my weak points, I could get better.
Yeah, and I think he will. I mean, he's gotten his development has been so rapid. I just expect him to make massive sweeping changes at like season over season for the next couple of years, or sweeping improvements. If you have anything else from preseason, like preseason news or whatever, before we take a break and then come back and talk about our quick little preseason preview.
I think I'm good. Let's wrap up this preseason that did not actually happen.
Yeah, I think we probably talked about it for too long. I think everybody's ready to move on and get to real basketball for a little bit before that somehow goes south quickly. But anyway, we'll take a break real quick, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the At the Hive podcast. It's Jonathan and Chase, and we're going to talk about the regular season because it's here in a day. One more sleep, like you said, to start the show. The Hornets tip off at the Spurs, and then they come home on Friday to play the Pelicans to start the season. Before we started the show, Chase, it's just like a big picture kind of preview to the season. You said the Hornets win total has dropped for the Vegas predictions, right, for the over-unders?
Yes, it has. So originally, like at the beginning of the, or not the beginning of the offseason, I should say, like after offseason moves have been made, the midst of the offseason between, you know, the free agency period and preseason, the Hornets win total was 36 and a half games, which obviously after they won 43 games last season is a pretty substantial drop.
Also,
no, go ahead.
Evergreen, just like evergreen statement, like Hornets summer win total over under is 36 and a half games. I think you just say that every July.
Yeah, right. Like every year there has been someone saying this on a podcast as long as podcasting has existed. But yeah, no, I mean, it's already dropped from 36 and a half, which was probably 2 months ago, to 33 and a half, which is, the three wins isn't a lot when you're just counting 33, 34, 35, 36. But on the court, that's a lot. That's a big difference. Like losing three games is, you know, someone very important wasn't playing those games or something like weird happened or whatever. Like, and that indicates that the people in Las Vegas who do know things, like this is not to be like they don't know a damn thing and this is way too low or whatever.
Right.
Like they have intel. They set these numbers for a reason. However, they're like the general consensus, I think, about how bad the Hornets are going to be is a little bit too much. Like they lost one contributing player. That player was very good. He was a borderline all-star. And I also to highlight, I guess, not that this is an enjoyable thing to say, but they do have an open roster spot right now, which one can assume that there's a reason they kept one singular roster spot open heading into the season. When they could have just filled it out with a minimum contract that would be very inconsequential to the salary cap and whatnot, and then had a full roster every night. They're not doing that, which is, you know, there, like I said, there's a reason for that. But there is not a reason to drop a team from 43 wins to what is now 33 wins to hit the under and wherever you would want to bet that at.
But a borderline all-star is not a 10-win.
No, no. Most all-stars are like, or not most, some all-stars are not even like a 10-win swing. Like that is, what's 1/8 of your entire season? Like that's just a significant portion. But because I think people have ran way too far with it. Like LaMelo Ball is, yeah, he's hurt. He's expected to miss time to start the regular season. If he misses less than 5 to 10 games, like it's not going to make a huge impact on their win total, because in the last preseason game, you can't take too much from it. They played very evenly with the Sixers without LaMelo, so there's something there even without him. There are good players on the team. Terry Rozier is a very, very good scorer. He's one of the best off-ball players in the league. He's an absolutely dynamite shooter. Anybody that's a good passer is going to be able to find a player like that because he's constantly getting open. You know who's a good passer? Gordon Hayward, who in his own right is a very, very good scorer and can create shots at all three levels, which I think was something we saw in the preseason as well. In the Philly game, that I think he had like 17 points. He hit a three, he had a mid-range jumper, and he had a couple shots at the rim. Like, that's what you want from Gordon Hayward, to create his own basket and be that release valve player that you need at the end of the shot clock or whenever you need a bucket after a tough stretch offensively. Kelly Oubre is liable to hit 11 threes at some point this year. Like, the list goes on. Like, there are good players here. I think people have gotten a little bit too far down in the dumps after what was a terrible, like, five-month stretch.
Right. Yeah, like I think Hayward is a big part. And obviously, it's easy to write him off because of the frequent health concerns. But I think people are underestimating how much of a – like how much he basically cancels out the absence of Bridges, right? Like they're pretty similar caliber players.
And Bridges absolutely
took a leap as a scorer, but I think without Bridges here, Gordon Hayward probably covers a lot of that gap.
Right, like before Miles Bridges took that leap, Gordon Hayward averaged 20 points a game for the Hornets.
Right.
So
so I think and then, you know, presumably he'll be healthy to start the season when Ball is out, and, you know, we'll see how that all shakes out over the course of the season. But yeah, 33 wins seems comically low. And then the other thing that I kind of stumbled across when I was writing this preview of Steve Clifford and the Hornets as a whole, and I don't think we paid any attention to it at the time because I think everyone was over Steve Clifford and everyone was excited for the new coach and stuff. But you'd agree with me in saying that when James Borrego took over, he inherited essentially the exact same roster that Steve Clifford had the season before, right?
Oh yeah, for the most, and yeah, for the most. I mean, there were certainly changes, but they were all like end of roster stuff, right?
Yeah, and like Dwight Howard was the big one, but Dwight Howard also, okay, I don't think is a difference making player.
I literally
right?
forget that he played for the Hornets.
I mean, it wasn't well, yeah. But the so. And this is just to me talking about the coaching kind of impact on this. So with Steve Clifford's last season here, the Hornets were 36-46, 13th in offense, 16th in defense. And then this is a big one, 8th in pace. So James Borrego and their expected win-loss, quote-unquote, like if you take their offensive and defensive rating, was 42-40 because they were struggling with close games. Which is more luck than skill most of the time. And the next season with virtually the same roster, James Borrego went 39-43, so a couple more wins, but 12th in offense, only one place improvement in offense, and 22nd in defense. And pace fell to 21st, so 8th to 21st. So that's not to say definitively that like Steve Clifford's a better coach, but that's a pretty substantial, like, the offense was pretty much the same and the defense dropped off pretty substantially. So my kind of the way I'm talking myself into this in my head is that if we get that same sort of reversal with the, because again, without, aside from Bridges, it's a pretty similar roster to last season. If we get that same sort of reversal based on system and principles, the Hornets should be pretty close to their win total from last year.
Exactly. That's exactly my thinking. And another, like, I think the fact that the hire was like a retread and people have already seen what Steve Clifford does with the Charlotte Hornets probably doesn't help, but it's not,
right.
It's just not the same roster. It's not the same style of roster. Like, the best player on this team is better than the best player on any Steve Clifford team. The supporting cast is better than that. Like, there's better young players to pick from to put in the rotate. Like, it's just everything is slightly better. And he's said all the right things, too.
Right. Yeah, I'll and then we'll not spend too much time on Steve Clifford because I think we talked about it a little bit, or at least at different points in the season. But the thing I compared it to in the preview thing was the 2015-16 team that won 48 games and went to the playoffs was built very similarly to this team. They had their best player was a guard, Kimball Walker. Their next best player was a versatile swingman. Like, they had Nick Batum. We have Gordon Hayward now. They did not have a post-present center other than Al Jefferson coming off the bench most of the season. It was all, like, Cody Zeller took most of the starting spot. And so, like, this roster is built very, very similarly to that one. And that team and the team the following year did not run their offense through the post. Like, the Hornets were near bottom of the league in post-up possessions per game when they did not have a post-up center on the roster. So I feel like everyone, because I see all the jokes where people are like, oh, watch out for Mason Plumlee getting fed the ball on the block. Like, Steve Clifford doesn't force, like, square pegs into round holes. So I don't. So we're going to, the offense is going to be based around LaMelo Ball. And Steve Clifford said that. And the offense is going to be fast. And the offense is going to shoot threes. Because that's what the Hornets did when Clifford was here the first time when they didn't have a center as one of their better players. The other thing, I want to hear your thoughts. Does it seem like Steve Clifford is different as just like a person than he was the first time he was here?
Yes.
Like, much more relaxed and much more, and obviously we don't see him in practices, but he just doesn't come across as like rigid and uptight as he did in his first stint here.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I feel like the perspective that he has as a coach has definitely changed after that year. He spent as like a consultant, I guess, basically, mm-hmm. is how he described it, I think.
Yeah.
But with Brooklyn last year, I feel like that definitely changes because you get like time, not even to learn from how other people coach, but just to think about how you do it yourself. Like, you're not actively doing it every day, so you're just kind of like, you just have more time to reflect on things and then
kind of self scout a little bit, right?
Exactly. Through that process, you're like, oh, maybe the next time I do this, I'll try it a little bit differently and see how that works or whatever. He seems like he's in a good place as a coach. Like, that not being the first choice of the job would be a little bit, make him a little bit perturbed, but it doesn't seem like that.
No, but I also think it also makes it to where he's got nothing to lose and it's easier to do your job freely when like you're not even supposed to have it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true. Actually, that's a good point.
Like, it, like if he had, there's no pressure. There's no pressure on him because everyone expects him to fail because he wasn't picked for the job. So if he gets over the like the fact that he wasn't the first choice, it's just like, I mean, what did you guys expect? Like, you didn't even want me to coach to begin with. Like, it's a pretty peaceful feeling, I would think. I guess the last thing I want to wrap up with is like the actual two games that are coming up. We got the Spurs on the road to start the season, and the Spurs, I feel like the name on it's starting to lose its luster, the name on their jersey, but it still always looks like something like, oh, that's a tough game, but the Spurs are bad.
It's going to be weird seeing them be like literally one of the worst teams in the NBA. Like they weren't good last year, but they're going to, I mean, not, I don't mean this to be like rude or whatever. Like, I think that this is Greg Popovich literally told people on media day, don't go to Las Vegas and bet on this team to win a championship. He said right. It in that exact term like that. So obviously the whole organization is not expecting to compete for a championship or really even a playoff spot probably. So they might be like historically bad for that franchise. It's going to be really like they obviously have not been this bad since they drafted Tim Duncan. And there are probably people listening to this podcast that weren't alive when Tim Duncan was drafted.
Right. So. And then they're going to just get the number one overall pick.
Yeah, right. They're going to get,
and then they're going to get modern Tim Duncan.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll be good again in 2 years and have a dynasty, and apparently that's just what happens in San Antonio. Right.
Their starting five is Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sohan, Keldon Johnson, Jakob Poeltl.
Right. Like that's a very interesting lineup of young players, obviously. And Jakob Poeltl is a good veteran that's going to like hold down that defense, but the Hornets are a better roster than this. Yes. Not only their starting lineup, but their depth is probably better, more experienced. Like, The backup guards in San Antonio are Josh Primo, Blake Wesley, and Malachi Branham, and Josh Richardson. Three of those players, or two of them, are rookies. Josh Primo is in his second season, and he's 21. So, like, they have an incredible – or Josh Primo is 19. I thought he had turned 21, but oh, my goodness.
Was, like, 18 before – he was –
I forgot that I thought he was not okay.
He was 18 when he got drafted. Like, he's as young. He's like as young as you can possibly be.
Jesus, I think it's just because I wish people were getting old at the same rate that I was. It seems like it's much faster. Like,
no, when you're getting in your late 20s, you start aging 2 years per year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what it is. But yeah, I mean that even further hammers home the point. Like, they're going to be relying on players like Josh Primo to play a lot of minutes and. Yeah. You know, it could certainly work out for them, but this is a soft opening night for the Hornets, I think, even though they got to travel.
Yeah, on paper, they should win. And then they come home opener against the Pelicans, which is a much tougher matchup.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know, you know, they get the advantage of the home court and, you know, the early season wonkiness that always happens. But I think expectation would probably be, and I didn't check, is Zion Williamson back? I know he tweaked his ankle, but it wasn't, he's not missing any time, is he?
I think he's day-to-day. I don't think they've officially ruled him.
Either way.
Oh, wait, no, 6 hours ago, he will play in Wednesday's regular season opener against the Knicks, so Zion will be available against the Hornets as well.
So, yeah, I think you probably want to see them go 1-1, right? And obviously, you know, this will all wash out over the course of the full season, but you probably want them to beat the Spurs, and then it's probably a acceptable loss to the Pelicans. But I think the Hornets should get one win out of these first two, right?
Yeah, that, I feel like that would be the bar that you'd probably want to set. Because, I mean, not the Pelicans are good too, but hopefully that one being at home gives them a little boost. I imagine the crowd at Spectrum Center will be pretty lively that night. So
yeah, don't give up on them yet. I know everybody's had a tough
for real
off season, but like, let's go support the boys. Let them have a chance to prove everybody wrong before we all write them off. And then Hornets go on a little mini road trip. Hawks, Knicks, Magic. We'll probably talk more about the back half of that. You know, as we continue to do the show, but and I think we'll probably hold off until we actually have an idea of what's going on. The Hawks look like they'll be good, but I don't know. they're tough to gauge because of how good they were 2 years ago and how much they fell off last year with like the same players. So, and then they don't have Gallinari anymore. They do have DeJounte Murray, which makes them incredibly scary in a backcourt, but I'll have to wait and see how that all pans out.
Yeah, Atlanta will be a fun one, I think, watching Trey and DeJounte kind of figure out how to share the point guard duties early on.
Right, which is like two completely opposite players almost, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
DeJounte Murray's an oversized guard. I mean, he can shoot now, and he's become a really good offensive player, but the archetype is like oversized defensive guard, and then Trae Young is the undersized scorer. So it's a cool combo they have there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we'll wrap it up there. Anything else you want to talk about before we call it a show?
All right. I gotta ask you.
Yep.
Apart from LaMelo Ball,
uh-huh.
At the end of the season, who are Hornets fans going to be looking at? Not necessarily as like the best player on the team, or second best player. Who had the best season? Who's your prediction for that? Apart from LaMelo, who's going to have the best year?
All right.
For the Hornets,
he's going to have the best season in the NBA.
yeah, exactly. All NBA.
I'm going to say B.J. Washington.
All right.
Because
I like that one.
Because I think Terry Rozier and Gordon Hayward can be the second and third best players on the team, but no one's going to like get hyped about it because they're the vets. So I think if PJ can average like 15, 16 a game and play good defense and make some plays, I think people will be like, super hyped about that.
Yeah, I agree. PJ's got a great opportunity this year. I'm excited. See, there's the Hornets have had a bad 5 months, but there's still things to be excited about. Like,
still a good team.
If PJ can match the increased volume with the similar efficiency to what he's already had, like, he's gonna score a lot of points per game. Yeah. He can shoot at an absurd level for a guy that's 6'7" and can defend the rim, and is like a great passer for his position too. Like, he's gonna be really good if everything works out well for him. So yeah. I'm super excited
for all the hand wringing. Like, a starting lineup of Ball, Rozier, Hayward, Washington, Plumlee is a good starting five.
Yeah.
With Martin, McDaniels, and Oubre coming off the bench, and maybe Kimba?
Exactly. Like, there we go. We got to plant the seeds now. That would be so awesome. That would be so awesome. I'd be so happy.
It can't not happen, right? Like,
I can't. He got waived officially by the Pistons on Monday afternoon. So he is a free agent. The Hornets would be able to sign him for a minimum, and he's still going to get all of his money from the 4-year deal that he's on the last year on right now. So
it'd be Mitch.
Perfect situation. Do it, Mitch. Do it. Bring that would bring the vibes back. That would help a lot.
If you want the vibes back.
Kemba would not allow us to be disappointed in the way that we are now. If he walked into Spectrum Center and saw everybody pouting the way they have been for 5 months, he'd walk right out. So we better, if he comes back, we better whip ourselves into shape.
Bring back Kemba for the vibes, if nothing
exactly.
else.
Exactly. I agree.
But with that, we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back more regularly than before this season for That The High podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
See you later.
Probably. See you.
Yeah, soon.